You are listening to Wells Tech, episode 602, recorded for June 4th, 2019, Digging Technology. Wells Tech is a weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. We are very excited this week to be talking about congregational services. In fact, beginning a series of interviews with members of that congregational services team, where they are trying to provide resources and consulting to congregations to reach out, to increase the services that they offer to their members, and lots of other great stuff, all trying to use technology as well. So I think you'll be interested in that. We have picks of the week. Sally has a tablet. I'm talking about a new computer from my mom. Community feedback, video of the week. Lots of great stuff coming your way. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Wells Tech, everybody. This is episode 602, recorded on June 4th, 2019. My name is Martin Spriggs, and this is a show about technology and ministry. Helping me chat up some of those topics, Sally Draper, as usual. Hey, Sally.
Good afternoon, Martin. Happy to be here with you, and I have technology and ministry news for you.
Well, it's very appropriate of you.
Yeah. I actually have a son and daughter-in-law that are currently over in Israel on a work-study tour. It's sponsored by Martin Luther College, Wisconsin Lutheran College, and Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary. So a group of students went with some professors over to Israel. And what's so exciting about it is they're actually doing an archaeology dig.
Neat.
For 5 days of the tour. And thanks to technology, I'm able to see what's happening over there on the other side of the world. So our family has a Slack page, and through computer Wi-Fi, so not really having to use their phone data plans or anything like that, they can upload pictures and keep us in touch with what they're doing. And they're finding a whole lot of cool pottery and stuff as they're doing their dig. It's really exciting.
Neat. And Kevin was over there how many years ago, kind of doing the same thing?
Yeah,
right?
They didn't do archaeology on theirs. Theirs
oh,
was
really?
Strictly
okay.
Tours. But this one is, it's 12 days, and they're doing 5 days of archaeology, and then they're touring after that. So, but the archaeology is near enough to Jerusalem. They go out in the early morning hours, like 5 a.m., and dig until noon, and then the heat is just too much. It's important that they come back in out of the sun and everything.
Right.
And then they do washing of the things they found and stuff. So they had to study techniques for their dig and for the washing process and all of that. And just a really neat experience. Anyway, they have the evening then to tour around Jerusalem. So they've been, most recently they were at Temple Mount. They went to the Garden of Gethsemane. Just a lot of neat things they're able to share with us.
That is neat that not quite halfway around the world, but a long ways away, certainly many, many different time zones away, you can kind of feel a part of what they're doing. That's neat.
Technology is amazing.
Yep. Yeah, and I'm sure those are life memories that they're creating, and that'll be something they'll think back on and enjoy.
For sure.
We have hit the summer months, Sally, and normally we take the summer a little bit slower, a little bit easier, and although we have a lot of stuff to do outside of the podcast, in the podcast, we plug along. We try and make it a little bit easy on ourselves by creating maybe a kind of a themable, consistent routine. So we take out some of our normal segments, and then we add, you know, one kind of focus that we can carry through for a number of weeks. And we are excited this summer to be focusing on one of our areas of ministry, and that's our Congregational Services Group. We talk on and off with them. We certainly work with them, you know, almost every day on different projects that they have. And that's kind of what brought them to mind, that they have heavy use, or in mind to have heavy uses of technology, not just kind of the traditional ones, you know, websites and forms, but other unique things that they're putting out there with instructional videos and just a lot of things that they're thinking about trying to extend their reach and hopefully help congregations in different areas of ministry. Congregational services is made up of a number of areas. Special ministries, for instance, we're going to hear about today. But they have discipleship and evangelism and worship. And they just have a lot of things in the fire and, again, a lot of opportunities for the use of technology. So we're going to try and grab a few of them, get them in front of the mic, ask them a few hard-hitting questions and some easier ones too, and just kind of hear about their joys in ministry and their use of technology.
Yeah, it was interesting. You referred to them as a singular area of ministry, and yet they are so big and so broad in their scope. Each of those areas, discipleship, for instance, at one point was adult discipleship and youth discipleship, and now it's one, and just that area is just huge. But the focus today, special ministries, is especially broad, and I think that'll come out as we talk with Pastor James Berenger, who's the administrator for special ministries. They cover so many areas and wear so many hats. It's really impressive, and it's also a great gift to be able to use technology to help with all the ministry efforts they're doing there.
So let's take a listen to that interview.
Joining us on Wells Tech today is Pastor Jim Berenger, who is the administrator for Wells Special Ministries. We welcome you, Pastor Berenger.
Thanks. It's great to be finally on the show.
And we'd love it if you took a minute just to introduce yourself to our audience.
Okay. Well, I've been a pastor for 40 years, and I grew up in Manitowoc, but I've been kind of all over. My places of service were Michigan and Japan and California, as well as many years here in the Milwaukee area. And from little on, I've always been the kind of person who sees somebody standing alone, and that's the person I'm drawn to try to figure out what's going on. So that kind of led me to special ministries early on.
And you've been in the building for how long?
It'll be 7 years this fall.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. Anything surprise you about your time here so far?
Well, I was dreading it. I had the idea of being an administrator when I'm a people person, and even when I had the call, I said, long-range planning, budgets, these are things that I'm noted for weaknesses in. But I was told at the time, we can help you. And I really feel like I think the most wonderful surprise was just the team feeling up here and the mutual assistance that everybody gives, because everybody understands the mission.
And congregational services is kind of morphed a little bit over the past few years, and it's got a new direction, right?
Yes, well, a more empowered direction, I think, is the big thing. So, when I came in, we were kind of a quiet group. We had several divisions. Adult discipleship was no longer with us, and youth discipleship was no longer there, and so we kind of maintained for a while, and then now with the current addressing of congregational problems as a priority, we are really focused on that and making real efforts to give congregations resources to succeed.
So let's take that a little bit further. Give us a kind of a broad view of some of the services specifically that special ministry provides in that suite of services you were talking about.
Okay, just like I said about the man who's standing alone off to the side, special ministries is always conscious of the fact that churches have to do what serves the majority of people. And yet you can't leave out the individual. And so you might have a child with Down syndrome, and there's only one child with Down syndrome in the congregation, or maybe there's only one autistic child or one person who's deaf. Well, there's certainly going to be more people who are hard of hearing. But these are things that people think, well, we can't do something for everybody. It's like, we're not asking you to do something for everybody. We're asking you to take care of your family and realize that there's a lot of people in the community who have those same problems, and so you may have an opportunity.
Okay. What are some of the categories that you mentioned? A couple of them, but there are many of them, right?
Yeah. So I always think of overarching categories of disabilities, and those are the ones I've been kind of mentioning, and then special circumstances like being in the military or being incarcerated, and even like supporting called workers as congregation members. And then we've kind of branched into training people in parish nursing and chaplains. So these are people who can actually address the changing circumstances of needs of congregation members. And then also we've gotten into large problems that usually aren't addressed in congregational life, like addictions and being a survivor of abuse and those kinds of overarching things. We provide resources for congregations to understand and address them.
So as you were talking, Pastor, I could just see the hats layering up and up. You wear a lot of hats in special ministries. That probably the broadest scope of any of the areas of ministry here at the CMM. And I assume you have just massive number of employees to make all of that happen, right?
I think there's four of us.
Oh, wow. Okay, so a better way to state that is I assume you work with a lot of volunteers, which is a huge blessing. How many are involved, and how do you keep them organized and motivated?
Well, it's hundreds, and it helps to have a special ministries mindset because those volunteers are so radically different in different groups. So what draws them in is sometimes they're really passionate about the cause, and we have a lot of family members and friends of somebody who needs this. But sometimes they just want to serve. Particularly, we draw retirees with that. They want to find something meaningful to do. Millennials can be really passionate about a cause, and so we've got some millennial teams that are just, they get things done, and they do things like millennials, but they do things because they care about it. To equip them means a lot of communication, and that's a key thing. I think even in congregational life, is you can't just give somebody a job and walk away. I think constantly of the Bible passage that says that we're to equip the church, and so you have to give people a job and not expect that they're going to do what a professional called worker is going to carry out. They're going to do it in as part of their life, and sometimes they're going to need your help and your guidance and your equipping for the next step. I really think I'm 65 now, and a lot of things I do today I wouldn't have been able to do even 20 years ago, but other people trusted me with a job and then gradually helped me with that job. And so equipping volunteers and communicating with them is a major part of this work. And that's where technology has really helped too.
So let's talk a little bit more about that. You've seen a lot of maybe even new tools come on the scene in the last 7 years, or certainly from your days in the parish, mm-hmm. for sure. How has technology impacted the outreach to these various groups, both volunteers and also in the hands of these volunteers and organizations trying to reach out to the people that they serve?
I think just in the 7 years I've been here, technology has totally changed the meeting part of and the working together part of our volunteers. Because now it used to be that to get business done, we had to meet here in Wisconsin, southern Wisconsin, and Milwaukee or whatever, and that cost hotel rooms and travel expenses, so we did it a few times a year. But with video conferencing like Zoom and Skype for Business, we meet regularly, usually at least once a month. And we have far more discussions. Email keeps us in touch daily on things. So there are a lot of people who can go forward. They don't have to wait for the next meeting. So in that sense, technology has really helped with communication. Technology has also helped a lot with getting traction, with getting moving forward, because like things like Trello and our Microsoft 365 cloud that we use, those kinds of things. We keep records, we store things, other people can see them, we can work together on things. And so you don't have to wait for a meeting of two people to work on something at a hotel or a restaurant or whatever. You can get things done and make plans. We just had a strategic planning meeting last Saturday for Conquerors Through Christ, and they laid out things that they wanted to do, and they worked it through, but they'll be keeping themselves on task through the various technologies during the year.
Just talked yesterday with one of your folks from your MVI group, Mission for the Visually Impaired, about getting access to some training videos to do audio recording. It was really easy to do some screencasts and for her to watch and to know what she's supposed to do. So just a great, easy, seamless, friction-free way for her to get involved and to feel confident in what she's doing. It just makes it, I think, a little bit easier for people to do what's in their heart to do.
having seen this on this end, I wish that I had known this, you know, 20 years ago for training lay people in a congregation, because to put together a little training video so that when you ask somebody to be a Sunday school teacher, they can, you can save some time and have them watch some videos first. Same thing with church council expectations and all the various things that people do in a church, to give them little training videos and help them understand. Right. I think is a real blessing, and I see this application more and more in special ministries.
You make use of our Moodle platform, our Wells.net University. Tell us a little bit about how you use that.
So we have it in two ways. One is that we ourselves have the training for child abuse prevention that we have on the Wells.net University, and that's one that I personally am involved in. And then we also, of course, use MLC's Moodle platform for all of our chaplain training courses. And just this morning I got a letter from a man in Virginia who just said, train more people. We just love our chaplain. He holds to the Word of God, and we don't see this in the nursing home. So it's just a testimony to the effectiveness of this training that people are getting. And Moodle, I've talked to the students, and they say they love this compared to even a regular classroom because of the interaction that's constantly happening as you're learning versus sitting in a classroom where one person is speaking and you're learning that way. But when you are challenged to give input and to react and to do this little assignment and then it's in real time, those things are powerful for learning.
Very good. Well, we'd like to hear more about what's next for Special Ministries. Anything on the horizon, maybe opportunities or challenges that you see coming up?
As far as a specific special ministry, I don't have anything that I would put out there. The challenges are more in how we do it or what's going on. So the one that we're looking at right now with interest is electronic communication to prisoners. The correction systems across the country have adopted email and now have phone systems and other things. And we're thinking, is there a way that we can also then get our tests electronically transmitted, which we have no for sure information that can happen, but we are very interested in it because just as we've seen outside of prison, electronic things take over all communication. So the same thing's true in prison. The biggest problem we face right now is that everybody's doing their own program. So I have three people that I am in contact with who are incarcerated, and there are different email systems, there are different phone companies, and it's really frustrating that way. But we're actively investigating, and if anyone has any input in that area, that would be of great interest to us because it's our administrator, who's got a real passion for that, really wants to crack that nut. Mission for the Visually Impaired, we mentioned the training there. Blind people have gotten so technology advanced, and right. Our volunteers kind of lagged behind that. And so now our committee has blind people on the committee, and we're trying to catch up to make digital things more available. And we're recruiting a lot of readers to start producing audio things again. So it's in a cycle of a lot of training. The training videos thing, I think, is going to be a lot more coming down the road with them. So, and the biggest challenge we have actually is probably the challenge nobody wants to hear about from a church body, but the low budget. Special ministries, the big misunderstanding that people have is they think that special ministries is funded through the CMO, through the Synod support that people give it through their congregation. And that's true of my salary and my assistant in the Synod office here. But prison ministry and military ministry, those are funded by donations of individuals. And in every one of these ministries, the cost of technology is, you know, just as an example, a Braille machine is, the maintenance on that Braille machine is a major budget function for us. So whereas there's almost no postage in mailing things to the blind, we have a substantial budget and no called workers to pay, but we struggle financially. So that's the thing that we're looking at is how can we also keep these things funded so they can keep moving forward.
So if somebody wanted to get involved, has a heart for this kind of ministry, or to learn more, or to support it financially, how could they do that? What would they do?
Well, you can learn more just by going to wells.net/special-ministries. I don't know if you even need the hyphen. I think you can do it either way. But there, you can look at all the different ministries there and see what's going on. Look at the latest news to see articles about things that have happened lately, and check out our resources. Then once you kind of have some ideas maybe of what you want to do to get involved, I'm a good place to start. Different people have different skills. I'm a recruiter and a networker, so I can usually get you to the right people right away, and that's probably the best place to start. Start with the office here at Synod.
Sounds like you're well-placed. Thank you for your work, Jim, and thank you for taking the time to share some of this stuff with us. We're excited about the whole series about congregational services and a great place to start with all the things that you guys do. Thank you.
Thank you. Privilege to be here. Thank you.
Our thanks to Pastor Barringer for taking some time out of what must be just kind of a regular cycle of juggling different responsibilities. He has a wide range of ministries that he needs to pay attention to, and just a ton of people, you know, not necessarily paid staff. He has some paid staff working in that group, of course, but just the number of people involved in each of these different sub-areas.
Yeah, great advice for managing volunteers. Mm-hmm. And I think everyone who's listening can certainly benefit from more ideas and help in that area, since volunteers are the heart of many ministry efforts.
I guess we could say they are digging technology in congregational services.
There you go.
Especially special ministries. So I'm looking forward to some of the other people we're going to talk to within congregational services. But again, thanks to Jim for taking some time with us. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to our picks of the week, Sally.
And I'm going to start with a little bit of a disclaimer. My pick of the week morphed over time. I should say my opinion of my pick of the week morphed over time. So I added this maybe 2 weeks ago because it was something new that was being delivered to me, and we always like new shiny tech at the Draper household. And I've been using it for a while now, so now my opinions aren't quite the same as my anticipation was. But my pick of the week is an Amazon Fire 7. It's a small tablet that I got from Amazon for a really great price. So that was the number one thing I wanted to share. It was $50, $49.99. I think maybe we had talked about that on the podcast, that the price had dropped or something. And actually, after I ordered it, I saw this same one for $39.99. So I could have saved even more. However, the price is back up to $49.99. So I will tell you, I got the last generation of the Amazon Fire 7. And right now on the Amazon site, they have a new generation for sale for $49.99. It doesn't ship until the 6th of June. So that would be Thursday of this week. But it's upgraded in that the one I got only has 8 gig of internal memory. And the new one starts at 16 gig for that same price. So that's a big plus. However, I will tell you, there's only 1 gig of RAM, which is a really low amount of RAM. And that's part of the reason why my opinion changed over time. The other reason is, just like when you buy an Apple device or an Android device, you have to log in to make use of the device. So for Apple, you log into your Apple ID. For Android, you log into your Google ID. For the Amazon Fire, you log into your Amazon account, which instantly connects my ability to shop on my Amazon account and connects their ability to market to me all the things I do shop for,
right,
and related things. And this is very much a marketing device. So the low price tag comes with the fact that you get a ton of advertising from a lot of different angles as you work with the device. And that was a little bit surprising to me. For instance, even on the lock screen is an advertisement where I have to the possibility that I could shop now. Right now it says for Gatorade Performance. So if I want some Gatorade, they're making it available to me right here on the lock screen. And my fingers aren't always the most wise in their selection. So, and maybe the button is kind of down near where I unlock it sometimes too. So it's really easy to get into the advertising side of things. And that's just one example. Your main screen is kind of dominated by links and things. They have a For You page that's real easily accessible, where they make suggestions of movies and books and things that you need. And so they definitely do a lot of marketing on the device. And when I originally purchased it, I was going to give it to my mom as an easy device for her to use and kind of have an upgrade because she has a really old iPad, kind of slow. but ultimately I decided it wasn't the tool for her. That was not without going down some paths, because one thing I learned about it was you can set up child accounts on here, mm-hmm. which is really cool. And Martin, I think you had a pick of the week early in the year where your grandsons had gotten a Fire tablet.
Right.
Kids edition.
I think so. Yep.
And this can perform exactly the same way. When you add a child account, you can put a lock code on your account. You can default the lock screen to go to their account, and they get that exact same experience. It's not as durable as the kids edition is,
mm-hmm.
and probably warranties and things aren't exactly the same. But their lock screen doesn't have advertising on it when it's a child account. They don't get inundated with advertising. It does suggest to them things like educational videos and characters that they like from cartoons and things that are popular
sure.
and stuff. So there are still some suggestions there. But one thing that comes along with that, and I'm sure you expounded on this back in the day when you talked about it, was you can set up hours of the day that they can use
mm-hmm.
it, and you can turn it off at night or whatever. And you can also say they have to spend X amount of time on educational apps and things like that. You certainly can control what apps are on it and limit their browsing and things like that. So lots of power there. And that's actually what I thought might be helpful for an elderly person.
Right.
To have the child account, to not have all the advertising. So the one thing that stopped us from doing it for my mom is we couldn't figure out how to get her logged into Facebook. She's lost her Facebook credentials. So didn't want to mess with her Facebook account, which is how she communicates with all of us. So
okay.
I brought it back home with me. And then I did more investigating. Did you know that you can install the Google Play Store on an Amazon Fire? It's actually an Android underlying
right.
operating system.
Yep.
It's a little bit techy how you do it. Not that hard, though. It doesn't take that long. And then that opens up all the apps in the Google Play Store, which normally you can't download apps from the Google Play Store. But if
mm-hmm.
you add that app, then you can.
Right.
And so that was a plus. Then my final negative, the one that I'm really, the verdict's really out on, is it's slow now that I got everything added that I think, well, this will be a cool little device for me. I really grinded to a very slow crawl on the device. And I'm not sure if it's a certain app or what. I definitely added an SD card and I moved apps to the SD card. I think maybe it's the 1 gig of memory and the
mm-hmm.
fact that some of the apps that I downloaded just are more
not optimized for that,
right,
maybe. Right.
More demanding than that.
Right.
So I can read the Bible on it. The Bible app works just fine. And that was one of my main things. I can read my Kindle books on it. So for $50, that's a win to be able to just have a more simplified browsing experience or whatever. But there are definitely some drawbacks. So that's my review, my pick of the week, Amazon Fire 7.
Nice. I have one too. I don't know if it's
bigger.
It's a little bit older, maybe. Is
yours
it bigger?
Is an 8.
Oh, maybe so. Sorry. I think it's the same concept, though, because I have some of the same experiences. One of the other positives, however, is it does have a full browser.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go to websites. You can get the Wells app. So you can get all the devotions and all the stuff that comes through that, as well as the yearbook, call report,
excellent.
All that other stuff.
I
was just testing that.
That
again. That's one of the reasons I've got this. I don't really use it for other purposes because of some of the things you mentioned. It is a little sluggish. The iPad is much faster and
mm-hmm.
a little bit bigger screen. But one of the things that I like about it, because I do use it for reading ebooks.
Mm-hmm.
So we went through together, you know, our team went through a project management type book on Scrum or Agile, and which we've talked about in the past. And I got the book on this particular device, and it's hand holdable.
Yeah.
You know, it's
a good
more
size.
Like a paperback.
Right.
Right. So it's not heavy, it's fairly light. And I think it's, for the price, I think pretty well constructed.
Mm-hmm.
I just noticed that it's got a camera. I don't think I've ever used that.
Yeah, both directions, actually. Yeah.
Okay.
Not the greatest quality.
Yeah,
but
I wouldn't think so.
Do.
Not for that price. But they come in colors.
Yeah.
Three or four different colors. And like you say, for $50.
True.
Not bad.
Yeah. And actually, the new one is 50 for 16 gig and $69.99 for 32 gig. And then the eight inch one, I
mm-hmm.
think was $79.99
right.
for 16 gig. So
yep.
It has 1.5 gig of RAM. And then if you go to a 10, there's 2 gig of RAM.
Sure.
So you can go higher and get more.
for still a pretty reasonable dollar figure, certainly compared to, you know, kind of the Cadillac, you know, an iPad or something.
Right, even
like
the low-end iPad is, what, $329 or something like that?
I think
that.
You can go $299 on the very low one now, but again, I don't think it's as portable, you know, certainly if you're just into book reading and just some light stuff. Mm-hmm. So
exactly. So, yep. Your mileage may vary. I've lived with it for a while. I may do the factory restart and try again and slim it down a little bit more and see about speeding it up a little bit.
One thing I will say about, you know, giving it to, and interestingly, my pick's going to be about something I wanted to give or did give to my mom, some technology support, is that it's pretty easy to set up because when you order it, it will come in your account, your Amazon account even. And if you don't want it to come in your account, you have to make sure you check the right box and say this is a gift, and then it won't come registered. So, so I just went through that process with some giveaways for our LZ Tech Leap Conference.
Oh, sure. So. Well, actually, mine, I unregistered and logged into her account, and then eventually I unregistered her.
Okay.
So there's a way to do that.
Yeah, you can do it on the device, right? Yeah.
Yep. Okay. So lots of options.
Good pick. Yep. Mm-hmm. Lots of things to think about there. My pick, as I mentioned, is also something that I had intended and did give to my mom. I went down there last week. I was in Florida. And I had set up a computer for her about 7 years ago, and that computer was basically, you know, limping along.
Time for a refresh,
right? So she couldn't wait for me to get down there and you know, kind of swap that out for her. So I had a lot of different options. One of the considerations, however, was she had a kind of a CD-based application for the tool she uses to manage ancestry data.
Oh, okay.
It's not online, unfortunately. Family Tree Maker is the name of the application. So it's still a traditional install it on your PC kind of apps, because otherwise I would have maybe recommended either a tablet or a Chromebook or something like that, which would have been safer, a little bit more low maintenance, etc. But we had to go with the computer, so I had to kind of stay in the PC realm. And what I wound up purchasing was the Intel Nuc, N-U-C. And now that I've said it, I don't remember what N-U-C stands for. But basically, it is the size. It's a fanless device. It's the size. It's probably 6 inches by 6 inches square and maybe an inch and a half to 2 inches tall. So this thing is tiny.
A box.
Yes. Square box. It has a bunch of ports, USB ports, HDMI, Thunderbolt, 4K support for a higher res monitor. In fact, it could run a couple of monitors, this particular version, and came pre-installed with Windows 10 Pro. The model I purchased for $450 had 8 gigs of RAM and 256 SSD. It's an i3 processor, which was plenty. And was a dual core i3 and was plenty of machine for her. The reason I'm recommending it is just this whole line, because you can go a little bit cheaper. You can get it into the high 300s. If you go down to 4 gigs of RAM and 128 gigabyte SSD, at least that's what it's showing on Amazon these days. But if you're looking for something that is super easy to set up, low maintenance, and doesn't take up much desk space, this might be a great option. And there are knockoffs of these, but I decided to go with the Intel version. They were one of the first to come up with this form factor. And this particular model, I'm really impressed with. The quality was good. You know, comes in a little tiny box. You pull it out, you plug it in, you turn it on, and you can't get a lot simpler. I did have to add an external CD drive.
I was going to ask about that. Yep. It doesn't come with that.
And those are cheap, $25, $30, Best Buy, whatever, or on Amazon. Excuse me. So you do have to live without that, but it does have an SD card reader, So you can plug those in from your camera, which was one of her requirements. And just kind of super nice to set up and just a great experience overall. Very portable as well if you want to put it either in a small place or move it around. You have lots of different options. So that is the Intel Nook, and we'll put a link in the show notes for this thing. But I know that at MLC they use these as well, and they've been impressed with them. I don't know if they use the Intel version or not. I think they do. I don't know what their configuration is, but they've had good luck with these in the classroom, classroom setups as well, where they'll hook them up and use them that way.
I see a ton of five-star reviews, so there's some really happy
It's an Amazon's choice, you know, pick, and I don't always put great stock in that, but I think a lot of times it is something that has had a lot of traffic on it, and, you know, you get a lot, there are a ton of reviews on this thing, of course, and it's got five, as you mentioned, five stars from a lot of different sources, so that's
excellent.
My pick of the week.
Good pick. We'll see how it... It turns out we'll give her 2 weeks, like my Amazon Fire, and make sure she's still alive.
It took me the morning, basically, to set it up, and I guess that would be the same with most any kind of computer, but just a good experience. Let's move on, Sally, to community feedback.
Sure. Just a couple of things I wanted to make note of here. First of all, I had a great conversation with Jill Schultz. I believe she's the pastor's wife at Redeemer Lutheran in Maple Grove, Minnesota. And she was looking for some sample media consent forms, which I was able to point her to on the Wells Tech Wiki. Remember that artifact?
I remember that.
Yeah.
Still got some stuff, good stuff there.
Yeah, haven't talked about it recently, but there is definitely some really good sample media consent forms there on the Wiki for adults, for parents, for school publicity, lots of different flavors and good conversations. Captured around that as well. So hopefully that was a benefit to Jill at Redeemer Lutheran. Next up, we heard from Brent Nimmers. He's a member down at Atonement in Plano, my old stomping grounds. Hi, Brent. Thanks for writing to us. He asked about the Brave browser, and if we'd looked at that, he said he would love it if Wells signed up for contributions so he could send his tips to Wells. And boy, that was brand new to me. I had to check it out. And what I can tell you about Brave is it basically blocks ads and cookies and things from your browsing experience. Is that what you understand about
right.
it?
Right. Yep. Stops those trackers from, you know, knowing where you went and recording that. And yeah, that's I think that's one of the things that makes this such a fast browser, which is one of their claims to fame, that it's 2 to 8 times faster than Chrome or Safari on mobile, and 2 times faster than Chrome on desktop are their claims. So
that's pretty impressive.
So cross-platform, Mac, PC, and mobile.
Awesome.
So I have not tried it. I've heard about it, but their website is pretty detailed on its features, and I was not aware of the fact that there were these Brave rewards, you know, that were available, which is similar to, you know, what we've talked about in the past with Good Search, tools like that as well. So
we can maybe look into having Wells in the list there. So thanks for the heads up, Brent. I'm sure we'll be diving in a little bit deeper as we have time. And then finally, breaking news that I found on Facebook last night. Just want to do a shout out to our friends at Lakeside Lutheran, specifically Drew Willems, who's been on the podcast before and is going to be at EdTech Lead in a few weeks doing a few presentations. He heads up their STEM camp, a summer program for younger students to get engaged with STEM. And I read kind of a news release from Lakeside last night on Facebook. It says, Pioneer Pete Curran, Ag Career Day committee member, and Lakeside Lutheran High School STEM Camp Director Drew Willems posed for a pic after announcing that STEM Camp will be taking 50-plus students to the Wisconsin Farm Technology Days. How about that? Yay, technology and farming. It's being held in Johnson Creek on July 24th. It says Farm Tech Days will provide free transportation and lunch to the campers and send them on a treasure hunt on Ag Career Day as an introduction to technology careers in the agriculture industry. The 65th Farm Technology Day is happening at the Walter Grain Farms, Johnson Creek, Wisconsin. And that's a pretty cool connection to make for a career I would have never thought of for technology.
Sounds like they are digging technology at Lakeside and in Crick there. So.
There you go.
Yeah, nice.
Excellent.
Got one more? No, you're done.
That's it for community feedback for this week.
Sally, how would somebody give us feedback if they would like to do that?
Well, it's all about our website, Martin, at wellstech.wells.net. You can find all kinds of links to different social profiles that we have out there where you can mention us or tag hashtag WellsTech. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram. Look for us in all those great places. We have a wiki that you can contribute to. We have a Google group that you can join and ask questions of a wide variety of church technology and ministry enthusiasts, I will call them, on our group. And if nothing else, you can send us a good old-fashioned email, wellstech@wells.net.
Very good. And one thing we will include in our summer series is that video of the week.
That's right. We enjoy sharing interesting videos. And this week, with our focus on the special ministries area, we found a sample video from their collection, one that is for the deaf and hard of hearing, where the components of Luther's seal are explained. So there's audio on the recording. There's a little kind of a PowerPoint running in the background, but then there's a person who's signing the presentation, so American Sign Language demonstration as well. So all kinds of greatness coming out of special ministries. This is just one of the examples.
Very nice. If you're interested in this information, as Sally mentioned, all the links we talked about and the pictures she mentioned, wellstech.wells.net. We look forward to you coming back again in our next episode, and that'll be 603.
Betcha.
All right. See you next time, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.